This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we begin this edition of Sharp Money here at South Point Casino and Hotel. Amal, always great to be with you, sir.
Likewise.
And then I look at this show that Dustin's put together, and I go, did you guys do this for me and you, for old boxing heads? Because when you have a show like with Lamps on it, people, who's Lamps? He might be my favorite boxing announcer of all time. Jim Lampley is going to join us in hour number one. And then you get Dallas Cowboy legend Steve Berline on the show. Yeah, Notre Dame too. I get that. But, I mean, for me, people forget when Aikman went down, Berline steps in, Cowboys go all the way to the postseason.
Absolutely right. I think he's a forgotten name. He's a big guy.
Big guy. Big, tall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could throw it from the
pocket. 6'5", legit.
Speaking of big guys, Jerry Cooney.
Yeah.
One of the first fights that I remember, like everybody talking about, was Cooney against Larry Holmes. Of course, we've got a big fight this weekend. That's why we're going to have Jim Lampley and Jerry Cooney on. Maybe right now, pound for pound, a supremacy at stake with Errol Spence Jr. And Terrence Crawford. Then we're going to talk some baseball with Jim Duquette. And then Mike Somich is going to join us in hour number three. So it's a hell of a show, if I may say so myself. But before we get to the boxing and the other things, the scare heard around the Natty. Woo, my goodness. Now, we're not doctors. We don't play them here at the network. But if you saw, and I know you did, the way it looked for Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, it did not look good. But the center says, this is Ted Karras, well, he thinks everything's going to be okay. Take a listen.
Well, me and DJ were running kind of parallel with him, and it happened. You could hear us both gasp. I think Joe will be okay. I don't know the extent, but I think it's just, you know, how hot it's been, and we're running around getting our bodies acclimated, but we'll see. I think Joe will be fine.
The thing, of course, that's what you hope, and nobody wants to see this for one of the budding stars in the league.
Yeah.
But again, if you've seen the video, which I have seen, it didn't look good. It looked like, you know, it's one of those no contact injuries and right. You fear the worst, or could it be an Achilles? Well, calf, it's not a knee. It sounds like the best case scenario if right. It's just a calf. Hopefully some Gatorade and some bananas. Maybe that'll cure it. But, I mean, right now, as we sit here in late July, you got to go with the ultimate kid gloves going forward with this guy.
Well, there's no question about it. And look, we see so many veteran players hold out. Now, Joe Burrow in his fourth year, so a little bit different scenario. But overall, I think if you're Cincinnati, take a conservative approach. As long as he's ready by week one, that's all you're concerned with. They open up with the Cleveland Browns. And I got to tell you, Dave, it's going to be a more important game than people realize, because this Browns team has had good success against Cincinnati mm-hmm. the past couple of years. You know, it's funny. I've kind of been on the fence about Deshaun Watson. I'm not talking about the off the field. I'm just talking strictly on the field. But sure. I looked at his numbers. He's a far better player than I've given him credit for in his career. And I think the difference could be with his mobility and what this team can do from an offensive line standpoint with, in my opinion, the best running back in football and Nick Chubb. This is going to be an important game for Cincinnati. You know, everybody's overlooking the Browns in the AFC. But if there was ever a long shot that you're looking at that could cause some problems for the Bengals in the AFC North, it's the Cleveland Browns.
Does it change the equation at all with the injury? Or do you believe, like the center and like the other guys, hey, yeah, we were all scared, but everything's going to be fine when we get there? Because, you know, I remember last year with, say, I don't know, you look at Matty Stafford. You and I were talking about this time last year. Going into the season, is he really healthy? And you just assume they're going to be okay, and then they're not okay.
No, you know, I think it's the mindset and the approach that everyone would take in terms of what they're doing. They're going to take approach of, hey, you know, he's going to be fine. We'll be fine. They're not sitting there concerned about it. So from that standpoint, I think it makes a difference just for them mentally. Now, what the result and how the long-term effects and ramifications will be remains to be seen.
All right. So again, that win total right there is sitting at 11.5 plus money here, plus $1.10. If you think the Bengals, remember they had the one canceled game. That's why there was only 16 on the schedule a year ago at 12-4 last year. If they can hit that win total, it is predicated on the health of one Joey B. So not that I would shy you away from playing that win total today, but like if I don't have a wager already in, there's no way I'm running to the window now after seeing what we saw from Joe Burrow yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny you said that. I was thinking about the futures market. A lot of people have the Bengals. If it was an Achilles, I mean, my God, the season's over. It changed the whole dynamic of the AFC. I think then Kansas City becomes everyone's prohibitive favorite in the AFC, but Let's just see what happens here. This team is really dangerous. I think Burrow is going to have an MVP type of season. This defense under Lou Amarillo has been one that's incredibly underappreciated.
Yeah.
I think people that follow football closely know from a statistical standpoint how good they've been. But just to most people, you look and you go, oh, Bengals, they're an offensive team. But defensively, they've been tremendous.
Now, I'm with you on that. I think it's maybe the most overlooked part of that entire team there with Cincinnati is the defense. I wanted to pick your brain on what we saw coming out of Ann Arbor. And Harbs is going to miss the first four games. If you've looked at the schedule, I don't think they're going to miss them. All four games at the Big House, at Michigan, all non-con. I don't think Michigan's in any danger of getting off on the wrong foot. But when asked about said suspension, I want you to hear what Harbaugh had to say.
Not allowed to talk about any aspect of that ongoing situation. And I'm with you. I mean, I love to lay it all out there. Nothing to be ashamed of. And but now is not that time. And that's about all there is to say about that.
Okay, first of all, he looks great.
Yeah, fresh haircut.
Right. I mean, he looks like he's rolling back the clock. He's slim.
Yeah.
Drink that milk, eat steak. It's a very politician thing that we see nowadays. You know, I can't talk about it. It's an active investigation. I mean, that's what that is. Man, I really want to tell you guys, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. He threw that in there, right? Like, hey, man, it's all good in the hood here, okay? But I just can't tell you about it. That is such a great get-out-of-jail-free card. Because, again, we see our politicians do it all the time. I just can't tell you. I want to tell you. But I can't tell you.
Yeah, but that's because people would rather hold their college football coaches more accountable than their senators. That's just another story. That was for Dustin, by the way. But, you know, the reality of it is this Michigan team is not going to miss him. You got East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers. And, oh, by the way, all four games are in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys recall, Michigan put up 78 on Rutgers a few years ago.
Whoa.
So it's not like this team can't sit there and beat them blindfolded. The State University of New Jersey, let's see how they perform. I think they're in serious trouble. Bowling Green, just to drive up I-75 there. UNLV coming to collect their check. Same with East Carolina.
In fairness, Amal, the people of each state do pay their football coach more than they pay their senator.
Well, that's true.
Well, because they get better results from most football coaches than they do their senators. I mean, that's a fact.
That absolutely is a fact. So, I mean, like, to me, it's like, but by the way, do we even care anymore? Like, seriously.
What's that?
As a society. If somebody's out with PEDs, they go, when can he play? When is he back?
Well, no,
nobody cares anymore. They just go, oh, yeah, Harvest is gone for four. Well, he did not miss the Ohio State game. Nobody cares.
They only care about the PED thing when it comes to voting for Cooperstown.
That's it.
It's so true. And by the way, baseball should move Cooperstown from Cooperstown, New York.
Why?
Stop.
Have you been there?
It's perfection.
Yes. What's wrong with Cooperstown?
So that's the only pro football. I've been to pro football and basketball Hall of Fames. I've not been to Cooperstown.
Oh, you got
to
go.
Okay, I don't disagree with you. However, here's the thing.
You can't say this and not have gone.
No, let me give you my reasoning. Is there a more difficult spot in the United States that's in the Continental 48 to get to than Cooperstown, New York?
It is in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. For New York, yes.
But good. Make it hard. You really want to be there, go. Like, find a way.
They've got an amazing Little League park there.
This is why I'll never go into business with this guy.
Why?
It is about maximizing profitability. He's like, make it hard to go there. No.
It's not about making money.
The hard is what makes it good.
It's about getting people to come and see your Hall of Fame so people have interest in the game.
No,
it's about growing the game.
Be there. I don't want the casual.
But who wants to go to Canton?
Yeah.
No disrespect.
Canton, Ohio is so much better than Cooperstown.
As a person from Northeast Ohio, I should take umbrage with that statement, but I can't.
Cooperstown's an hour from Saratoga. Saratoga has a huge racetrack, has a lot of people going to it every year. People can hit Saratoga, hit Cooperstown the same day. I know because I've done it.
And again, I can't say, well, it's the best of the Hall of Fames because I haven't been to all of them. But for the ones I've been to, which is only Cooperstown, it's absolutely the best.
I went to the Basketball Hall of Fame so long ago, it is completely different now.
Springfield, Mass. Another big metropolis that Amal thinks.
By the way, you can at least get to Springfield. It's not far from Boston. I mean, come on. Give me a break.
Cooperstown's not far from Albany.
It's right where I was born. Thank you very much.
And Albany is the state capital of the best state in the union.
I mean, I don't know. I was born in the state of New York, so I'm not going to sit there and argue with you.
All three of us. All three
New
Yorkers?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Wow. I know what your Social Security starts with then.
Zero.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, look, back to Harps, but for real, it's not going to matter, right? It's not going to matter for these four. We understand that. I do think that that's the PC thing to say that Harbs has to say. But does it have, for you as knee-deep in college football as you already are, does it affect them at all after those four games?
No. It just, it, to me, here's the big thing. If you're the interim coach,
yeah,
you've got an opportunity to get four wins on your resume. Think about this. Remember, Ryan Day took over for Urban Meyer when he had a three-game suspension. They won. They had a come-from-behind win against TCU. Ryan Day eventually gets elevated to head coach. If Jim Harbaugh were to potentially win a national championship this year and says, hey, I want to go back to the NFL, then it's maybe an opportunity from someone on this staff to showcase what they can do for four games.
It's a great point. And again, those first four, we don't think are in jeopardy. There is one conference game on the schedule. I sit corrected. It's Rutgers, the last game at the Big House. They're still going to be double-digit favorites in that game.
They're going to be.
I can't 30, see any.
They're going to be 30-point favorites in the first three games plus. Oof. And they're going to be 20.
Something.
No, they're going to be 30 probably against Rutgers. They're going to be 30. Somewhere, let's just play it safe. They're going to be 25-point favorites in all four games at least.
Very quickly, because they are the two-time reigning defending Big Ten champs.
I felt like that was a shot at me, but please continue.
A little bit, but like, are they still underappreciated for what they've done the last couple of years?
That's a great question, and I would agree. Yes, they are. I think this team right now, I think the bookmakers look at Georgia because they have an easy schedule and say they're going to be in the college football playoff. All they have to do is win the game at Rocky Top. The SEC title game, and then they're going to be in a position to be able to get to the college football playoff. To me right now, I think Michigan, I don't know if they have the best talent, but I think the team is in the best position to win a national title of anybody in college football.
It's fascinating to see what they've been able to do the last 2 years, what they could do possibly without Harbs in those first four. When we come back, let's start spreading those rumors around Major League Baseball. It's discussed next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out, and our college football guide drops next week. So get previews and predictions for every D1 team and conference, best bets on futures and season win totals, plus an in-depth breakdown of how you can use our betting splits and power rankings to make you a smarter better this upcoming season. So sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of just $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to help up your betting game. Remember, this offer does end July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Take advantage of these special offers and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here. It's South Point Casino in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. And Amal, what a real treat.
Oh, an honor.
To have boxing royalty on the program with us now. Four-time Emmy Award winner, International Boxing Hall of Fame, called HBO fights for over 30 years, Wide World of Sports, 14 Olympics. What hasn't Jim Lampley done?
Absolutely nothing. I'll be honest with you. I'm privileged tomorrow night to be working the Showtime pay-per-view, and for me to speak to a legend like Jim Lampley. I worked every day with Brent Musburger for 3 years. Whew. And to have a gentleman like Mr. Lampley on, it's an absolute pleasure and a privilege.
Jim, thanks for joining us today. You know, we're excited, obviously, about this Errol Spence Jr., Terrence Crawford fight tomorrow night right here in Las Vegas. Is this one of those fights, Jim, that would still, for somebody who's called it all, like we mentioned, something that moves that meter for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, very definitely the fight of the year, a fight for which we have waited years. And, until it happens, you can't definitively say, okay, this is in a category with Duran versus Leonard or Hearns versus Leonard or some of the other great welterweight title fights that have taken place during my era as a boxing fan and follower, but it certainly has the potential to be, and could become a repeat entity, could become a trilogy. All depends on how they perform and what the outcome is tomorrow night. But there's every reason to expect that this is a really top-notch, maybe great fight between two very high quality, maybe great fighters.
Mr. Lampley, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to get to a championship fight in their lifetime. Can you just kind of set the scene and what the vibe is like when you are at a championship fight? I was telling people it's bigger and better than a Super Bowl when you are at a fight of this magnitude. As you alluded to earlier, people have been waiting 5 years or more for this one. And just the atmosphere around these types of fights, you've called so many great fights.
Well, in the Super Bowl, you're looking at two teams And by teams, we're talking about 45, 50 individuals, and those two teams have already played 16 regular season games and two or three playoff games. So there's been a lot of activity leading up to a Super Bowl or an NBA playoff series or any of those other kinds of things. Championship prize fights like this are unique in the sense that the only buildup is the fighters are preparing, fans are preparing, and we're waiting for a long period of time to see what's going to happen within a 48-minute envelope, maximum number of minutes that are going to be involved in creating whatever is the outcome in the ring. So the intensity of the event is magnified by the single thing that sets boxing most apart from other sports. Conventional sports, football, baseball, basketball, all depend on abundance and regularity for their relationship to the audience. I'm interested in these teams because their activities are abundant. I watch them on television. I watch them regularly. I understand what I'm seeing. I'm excited to see them finally going against each other for the biggest stakes. Boxing is marketed and presented on the basis of scarcity and irregularity. I've gone years wondering whether I was going to see Terrence Crawford in the ring against this particular opponent. I've gone years wondering from the opposite perspective whether I was going to see the fight. So at the end of the day, it's the time capsule moment that has been built up to for a long period of time. And whether Errol Spence wins or whether Terrence Crawford wins, they will both have emerged from a moment in their career that is uniquely set apart from everything else in their career. Might happen twice, might happen three times, but whatever happens tomorrow night, it will be a crystal clear, distinct memory because of the scarcity and irregularity of major prize fights.
Dave, there are title fights and then there are legacy bouts, and this is exactly what this is.
Absolutely feels like it. And what a conversation we're having here with International Boxing Hall of Famer Jim Lampley. And Jim, when you look back on your career and some of the bizarre things you've seen, Fan Man comes to mind, obviously with Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe. I remember your call, Julio Cesar Chavez and Meldrick Taylor. You're going to watch Lou Duval go absolutely crazy. And of course, one night in Tokyo, you're there for Buster Douglas, maybe the biggest upset in the history of boxing when he knocks out Mike Tyson. How do you, when you see these moments unfolding before your eyes, are you almost starstruck in the moment of witnessing what you're seeing? And sometimes it really does feel like it's almost unbelievable what you're actually witnessing.
Well, of course, when I was calling fights and those kinds of things were happening on my watch, and of course, there's enormous intimacy. Once again, go back to the Super Bowl, NBA playoffs, the World Series, the announcers are there and they're closer to the event, arguably, in some ways than most of the fans. But only in boxing do you sit at ringside about 36 inches maximum away from the edge of the ring. And so you have a more intimate view and perspective of what goes on there than is the case in any other sport. And when you talk about Tokyo, and I think there's no question that Douglas's dominating win over Tyson was the most amazing upset in the history of the sport. Consider that the very first prize fight I ever attended live when I was 14 years old in 1964 in Miami Beach between Sonny Liston and Cassius Clay.
Wow.
Had an astonishing outcome with a seventh-round knockout victory for Clay. That was immediately identified and unquestionably identified as the biggest upset in the history of boxing. So as the later rounds of Tyson-Douglas are unfolding, and Douglas is becoming increasingly dominant and landing big shots which could conceivably lead to a stoppage or a 10 count, I'm sitting at ringside thinking to myself, oh, my God, the very first live prize fight I ever attended with a ticket for which I had paid lawn mowing and car washing money earned over a period of months, was the biggest upset in the history of boxing. And now, here I am sitting with a headset on, calling for the entire American audience, my description of the fight which will now displace that one as the biggest upset in the history of boxing. So it's impossible to have a moment like that without, in a way, thinking to yourself, oh, my God, this was destiny. I was supposed to be here because it links so directly to that moment in my childhood.
So glad you used that example. We talk about it all the time. We talk about betting. And one of the things is when you look at the greatest odds of a long shot in an individual matchup or game, nothing comes to mind more than Buster Douglas beating and really pummeling Mike Tyson in Tokyo that night. I think so many people kind of remember where they were, but probably weren't engaged with that fight. Mr. Lamp, I want to ask you, I know you've covered a ton of fights and fighters. Is there anyone that stands out to you that inside the ring, outside the ring, you respected them as a fighter, but they were also just a great person? I had a chance to meet Mike Tyson yesterday, and I'll tell you what, different guy than many people may have remembered. It was just a terrific human being now and where people have seen him in the past.
Well, I've known Mike since he was a 19-year-old prospect. His very first network television exposure on ABC was the very first fight I ever called as a broadcaster. He delivered a fifth-round stoppage of a journeyman fighter named Jesse Ferguson that day in the fourth round before the fight was stopped in the fifth with blood all over the ring. Mike had thrown a right uppercut, turned out to be a trademark punch of his, that flattened and destroyed Ferguson's nose, and it was an electric moment. It was shocking. It was thrilling in a way. And afterward, my expert commentator, an ABC executive named Alex Wallow, who had grown up getting on the train from Greenwich to go to Gleason's and other gyms in Manhattan because of his love of boxing, Alex went into the ring to interview Mike and asked him about the uppercut. And Mike instantly said, well, Captain Amato taught me that the purpose of the uppercut was to drive the opponent's nose bone into his brain. So I was trying to drive Jesse's nose bone into his brain. And at that moment, I thought to myself, oh, my God, look at what I have happened into here, because I was just becoming the blow-by-blow guy for ABC.
Mr. Lampley?
It is not only going to be the greatest quote machine in boxing.
We got to go to break. If you could hang with us, we'd love to carry you through the break. We're going to come right on back here. Stay with us here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin our number two of Sharp Money here at South Point Casino and Hotel. Dave Ross and Amal Shaw coming at you. Boy, what a show we've got, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We've got Steve Berline joining us now, kind enough with his time. You can follow him on Twitter, at Steve Berline. Of course, as a Dallas Cowboy fan, I think of Steve and his Cowboy days, but I know Golden Domers think of him from Notre Dame as well. Steve, great to have you on the program again. I did want to start there, if you don't mind, at Notre Dame. Now that you have Sam Hartman coming in as a transfer from Wake Forest, you know, it's weird when you see the portal and how things work out these days. What do you make of this move for Hartman this year at Notre Dame, and what are the expectation levels like?
Well, I can honestly tell you, first off, thank you for having me on today, fellas. I appreciate it. Always enjoy getting into this kind of stuff. But I think that for the first time in a very long time, I think the Notre Dame faithful have very high expectations. And it's specifically because of Sam Hartman and what he's proven, what he's done in his career at Wake Forest. I know it's not in a he wasn't doing it in a traditional offense, but I had a chance to meet him about a month ago at a charity golf tournament back in South Bend, and he is so hungry to prove and show that he can do it. His experience, obviously, is second to none. He's a sixth-year senior, and I think that for the first time in a long time, we are really going to have what I think would be considered a chance to have elite quarterback play. And, it's been a very, very long time since Notre Dame has had that level of play out of the quarterback position. And I think this really might become kind of the model that they go after. They did it last year with Jack, or 2 years ago with Jack Cohn, and ended up working out pretty well for them. And I think there's always going to be one of those kind of quarterbacks like Sam Hartman out there that are that fifth year, the six-year guys are obviously are thinning out a little bit, but a fifth-year guy who's already graduated, who has that extra year of eligibility left, who's going to understand the value of what that Notre Dame quarterback moniker will do for you for the rest of your life, and the attention and the profile that you get stepping into that role as a fifth-year guy. I think that that's going to be kind of the way that Notre Dame competes at the quarterback position, because as we know, Notre Dame just will not jump into the NIL stuff at the level I think that they would need to in order to get some of the elite quarterbacks around the country. They're not going to play that game. So this kind of a model, I think, works really well for Notre Dame. And I think Sam Hartman is going to have a great year.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think the acquisition of Sam Hartman really elevates Notre Dame offensively. People don't realize, they didn't watch a lot of Wake Forest games, Dave. Mm-hmm. This kid, no disrespect to Dave Clawson and his coaching staff, he was the reason they were in the position they were in. People don't realize, I project too much to the NFL, Steve, and I just don't think people realize how good he's going to be, and I love what you spoke about him there. Want to go to a former team of yours, the Carolina Panthers. They draft number one overall, Bryce Young from Alabama. I don't know how much you got to see him play in Tuscaloosa, but if you had a little bit, what are your thoughts on him? And then you are a big guy. Bryce Young, the opposite end of the spectrum from a size perspective. Today's game is a little bit softer, no disrespect to today's players, but can he withstand the hits?
Well, in today's game, I would be an average-sized guy at best. I was 6'2", 225 when I played, and, you know, that's considered fairly small in the NFL today. But some of these guys coming out now, and Bryce Young being one of them as well, that's my biggest question mark. I mean, they say he's, what, 185 pounds, 5'10"? That's what he's kind of listed at coming out of Alabama, at least. I have really very little question about him and his ability to, translate at the NFL level from a quarterback knowledge perspective and the ability to grasp concepts and read defenses. And he's done a lot of that throughout the course of his career at Alabama in a very, I think, NFL style offense. Probably more so than many colleges are doing these days. I think his experience in that system under Nick Saban and the offensive coordinators he's had there will translate very well. And I think he can make all the throws. I think he can do all the things required to be a successful quarterback at the NFL level. But I just worry about the durability thing. And I always say this about the undersized guys. I said it about Kyler Murray. The jury is still out on him, I honestly believe. And this is a huge year for Kyler Murray in Arizona. But for Bryce Young, it's not a question of, I think, whether he can play at the NFL level. It's whether he can do it for 17 weeks into the, you know, throughout the NFL season and still be playing at the top of his game if there happens to be an opportunity to play in the playoffs. That's going to be the biggest question. If he can stay healthy, they can find a way to keep him on the field, I think he has a chance to be a real special.
I want to go to another one of your former teams, and that'd be the Dallas Cowboys. And again, for Cowboy fans, you've got a spot in our hearts forever. In 91, you step in for Troy Aikman, take the Cowboys all the way to the playoffs. The quarterback now is Dak Prescott, and he's coming off after that injury last year, missed five games. And Cooper Rush came in there and did a pretty good job there. And instead, he's on record, I'm not going to throw 10 interceptions. You know the pressure of not only being a Notre Dame quarterback, but being a Dallas Cowboy quarterback. Is that wearing on Dak? And what type of year do you think Dak's going to have down this year with a star in his helmet?
Well, let me just say this initially about Dak. I like Dak Prescott, but I'm not sold on him. And I never have been. And he is Tony Romo. He is Kirk Cousins. He's a guy that can put up the big numbers. He's got a lot of talent around him. He's in a position that almost any quarterback in the NFL would kill to play in that offense with those skill position guys around him. The opportunity for success is very high, but it's not about the statistics. It's not about the numbers. And we obviously know the documented interception issues he's had the last few years, but his production offensively when he's been healthy has been with the best in the NFL. But when the game is on the line. A big game is on the line, a game that you have to win against a quality opponent. These guys just kind of disappear a little bit. And you can look at the track record through the course of Dak's career as a starting quarterback. The big games, the games that he has to show up and they have to have him play big in order to win, he does not show up. And that is, I think, the monkey on his back. And he knows that. Believe me, they talk about it in the locker room and in the meeting rooms. And he understands that in order to get that respect and that comfort and that confidence that you're going to be the guy for a long period of time, you've got to start winning those big primetime games, especially late in the season, those games coming down the stretch in December, and give your team a chance to get in the playoffs and go deep in the playoffs. So we'll see. I mean, he's going to have a good year. I think he's going to put up big numbers. He is going to be pressing a little bit to prove, I think, everybody wrong because he knows people are talking about it. But I want to see if he can step up when they need him to step up and win the big games.
I love that breakdown. That is so honest and so accurate.
Yes.
I absolutely love it. Want to go to a team that's on the cusp of potentially getting to a Super Bowl again. That's the San Francisco 49ers. But we see Brock Purdy coming off a UCL injury. From your perspective, how good can he be despite the fact that, you know, he was Mr. Irrelevant from a draft standpoint? Not really that relevant as you get into the second season, but the talent around him is so immense. Does he just have to be like a Trent Dilfer and just manage the game?
Well, I think that he is a kid that potentially has, you know, very, very special qualities. He does remind a lot of people of Joe Montana with his overall demeanor and the way that he kind of moves. He's not a runner per se, but he's very mobile. He's very good at extending plays and throwing the ball on the run. The body of work is still, in my opinion, not enough to make a true judgment as to whether he's going to be the guy long term. And obviously the big question about the elbow. I had the exact same elbow surgery twice late in my career, so I know what he's going through, what he's been through. I think the one mistake that the Niners could possibly make, and I think they need to avoid, is trying to get him out there too early. And I can share a personal example. I had, after my last year in Carolina with the Panthers in 2000, I had to have the same surgery after that season. I got released by the Panthers because of salary cap reasons, and I was so pissed off about that, and I was about ready to retire, but Mike Shanahan offered me the opportunity to go to Denver to finish up my career, and I pushed it a little bit too hard going into training camp. I would have been ready probably for the regular season, but I wanted to show Shanahan that I could be ready for training camp, and I pushed it a little bit too hard, and I tore the elbow again. And so that's what I think the Niners have to be very careful with. They've got to try. We're talking about the same time frame. Surgery right after the season was over. You've got to let that thing get to 100%. He's got to work his way up from a standpoint of the endurance and the conditioning of that elbow. And it may mean letting him sit for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, giving Trey Lance those games. I know they have confidence in Trey Lance as well. Let him see if he can get the team off to a good start. And then after that first quarter of the season, make the decision of who you want to go to and how you want to handle that QB situation.
Absolutely.
But I really do think that Brock Purdy, if he's healthy, has a chance to be a special quarterback. And that system, as you said, the players they've got in that depth chart, it's spectacular. I mean, that would be, I think, the number one destination for any quarterback if they had a choice.
You know the Shanahan system very, very well, Steve. Hey, we really appreciate your time today. By the way, how's the arm today? Can you get out there and still whip it in the backyard?
You know, I could still wing it. There's no doubt about it. I still have little visions that I could get out there and play in this new NFL, you know, where the quarterbacks don't get hit very much. I feel like I could get out there and throw it if I had a good solid pocket. But shoot, man. I think we all feel that way. I'll take it all the way to the grave. Reality says that's probably not the way it is, but I still think I can get it done.
Steve, great conversation. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the upcoming season. We'll have you back on very soon. All right, much more to get to. Talk some more NFL when we come back here on Sharp Money. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number three of Sharp Money. Dave Ross and Amal Shaw here at South Point Casino and Hotel in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. It is getting closer, closer, closer. Phones are ringing. Trade deadline is August 1st, Amal, as we all know, right? Now, the Angels are already on record saying, we ain't dealing Shohei.
Yep.
Don't call. If Amal Shaw GM is out there, you still call, don't you? You make them hang up on you again?
100%. I mean, look at sales 101. You either get a concrete no or, you know, you keep calling back. And to me, at this point in time, Shohei throws a one-hitter yesterday.
Right.
If you're the Angels, you are at the apex of his value. Why not just trade him right now? What are you doing in the next 2 months with him?
Well, it sounds like because of the other deals they've made, going to get the Lucas Giolitos of the world, the White Sox, and Lopez from that staff, that's the Angels' push to tell Shohei, hey, we're still in it this year. We're still trying, we're 500. Right now we're 3 back in the wild card race. So they feel like they're making that push them all. But is that enough bigger picture that even if the Angels make the postseason, that it keeps Shohei in Anaheim past this year? Because that's all the determining factor is. Unless you really think the Angels can win the World Series this year with Shohei Ohtani, if you're Artie Moreno, the question is what I'm doing now before August 1st by not dealing you and telling all the other GMs he's off the table, then you're saying, Shohei, this is all for you for next year. Remember this in the offseason when you're a free agent and you could screw us the second you hit the window.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting how it plays out. Look, I firmly believe he's going to wind up with the New York Mets. Everybody else I know thinks Dodgers.
Oh, I hope you're right as a Metropolitan fan. But then the Angels are caught here getting nothing for the greatest talent we've ever seen.
Yep.
And you and I didn't cover Babe Ruth. So we can't make that claim. Let's bring in Jim Duquette. It's great to have Jim on. Of course, former GM in Major League Baseball, now at MLB Network Radio and Sirius XM. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Duquette GM. Jim, we were just talking here, theorizing. I'm sure this has been your existence. You know this so well as a former GM in the league. The Angels say Shohei is off the table. Is GM Jim Duquette still making that call just to make sure he's really off the table?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'll guarantee you, after he said he was off the table, they got a couple calls that day. I mean, you have to do it, right? And that's the thing. Even when the Angels said they were listening, they really weren't, I don't think, actively considering trading him. They were looking, this is what every team does at this time of the year, right? So you're looking at the options. If you're overwhelmed, and listen, I think when I was going through the trade deadline, and most of my GM friends, both they're in the game or out of it now, they would have traded maybe a family member at the trade deadline if they got the right deal, right? So I probably would have done the same thing if it would help us win. But most of the time, those offers that you get back aren't worth it. They're not what you think is value. And so you dismiss them, or you try to get them to move up on their offer. You negotiate back and forth, and then the 100th conversation that you have with another team is usually the deal that ends up getting done.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Just from a baseball perspective, if you're the Angels, first of all, tell me, do you believe if they can retain him? And then, if you don't think it's going to happen, don't you have to make the move? I don't get keeping him for what equates to about 9 to 10 weeks, and your team is not even on the cusp of being the premier team in the American League.
So, listen, I'm with you on that aspect of it. If we just look at it, their chances to retain the player are small. It's going to be the biggest bidding war and the most money we've ever seen in the sport, right? So the chances of them keeping him are small. They think, and there's a rational part of their conversation on this. They think that if they keep him, it gives them a better chance. And let's say they do or they don't get to the postseason, but they showed the willingness to go all in and push all of the chips in. They think, and there are some people that agree, that it will give them a little bit more of a chance than Ohtani going to a team that he's unfamiliar with, a team that, you know, more than likely he's going to have a chance to win more than the Angels, because the Angels haven't won. But the familiarity of the Angels, the teammates, the surroundings, the way he's handled there's different certain ways that he's handled that, in terms of handling and talking to the press, as an example. You know, it's not, he doesn't have a lot of demands there. Those are all things that are factors in a free agent signing. They shouldn't be major factors. It's usually always about the money. But if the money is going to be so big that the feeling, at least within the Angels, is the level of comfort will also matter to him. And so that's what they're banking on. It's kind of like this last-ditch effort sales job, the close for them before he goes out there and starts to get recruited by other people. I just think that realistically, the way it goes to other teams, you know, when they get a chance to recruit him and show him that, hey, here's what we've done in terms of winning, here's where we're going to go with the winning, like that resonates with somebody like Shohei. And I think that's where the Angels are going to get, you know, knocked out of this bidding. And so, you know, going back to the original part, yes, I think they should have traded him. But I also feel like they missed the opportunity last year to do it and not necessarily this year.
Talking to former MLB GM Jim Duquette. And Jim, it's so interesting because, again, to y'all's point, you and Amal, about what to do with Shohei Ohtani, we've seen different avenues of mega superstars in recent years. You go back to Washington, D.C., and Bryce Harper. The Nationals made what I think they thought was a legit offer. I don't know if that was to save face with the fan base. And then, of course, he leaves in free agency and goes to Philadelphia. The Orioles years ago with Manny Machado, I think people have already forgotten. Yep. He was actually dealt to the Dodgers before he signed the huge contract with the Padres. So the Orioles tried to recoup something knowing they were going to lose him. So there's no right way or wrong way. Artie Moreno's on record saying, Jim, I don't want to be the owner that trades away Babe Ruth, essentially, here. How much does that play into it, the public perception of what you're doing with your star player?
Well, in some organizations, it weighs more than others. You know, I think for the most part, they're really well-run organizations. You know, they're able to separate the two. You know, they're able to say, listen, you know, we're not in it this year. We'll move him. Or in Ohtani's case, you know, we make it a run at him as a player. Like, let's go back to the Red Sox when they had Mookie Betts, right? They kept making him offers. And it was almost $100 million less every offer that they made versus what he was looking for. That bar kept moving on them. And so they ultimately traded him, and they took the short-term PR hit. But they've always been competitive, and they've always spent money on the product. And, you know, eventually the fans forgive you, you know. And so I think if they forgive you, if you field a good team, or, you know, you're spending money. So I think all those things kind of are intertwined there. I used to work for an owner that was similar to Artie Moreno, and, you know, his name is Peter Angelos. He owned the Orioles. And there was a 10-year span where we didn't win anything because he had that mentality. And there's a reason why the Angels haven't won, you know, even been in the postseason since 2014. It's been the way that he has owned and run that team. So, you know, I think that the proof, you know, good or bad, is always in the results at the end of the day, you know. And I think that's where, you know, yes, he was worried about some things. I would say they're normally important, but in this particular situation, I would have argued this. The guys that you get back in return for Ohtani will make your organization better when you go out and pursue him this winter, and that should resonate with Ohtani more than anything else, more than just a, let's say, a half effort to, you know, get into the postseason this year. So, you know, again, we're not going to know to the end of this, but I think there are multiple ways for the Angels to have done, you know, the right thing for them long term, which is to trade and get a huge haul. And then, hey, you want to throw the most money at them and try to convince them again, you know, go for it. But I think those percentage chances are really small.
Jim, I love what you said about the return and why he should come back to Anaheim potentially if he were to go or be traded. Which pitcher right now in the market that's potentially on the block intrigues you the most that you would want to acquire?
Well, like, I think there's a couple of them. Like, I don't know if Dylan Cease is available. They say that he's not, but there's going back to the original thought, like, you could overwhelm him with a trade proposal, and I think Dylan Cease is available to get him. So, if you were able to squeeze him out, that would be interesting. I'm very curious what the Mets decide to do with Justin Verlander. I think there's enough interest out there. I don't know if he wants to go. He controls where he can go. He's got a complete no trade. But he's another guy that would really intrigue me. And the guy that maybe is the under the radar guy who's been pitching well, that hasn't necessarily been a number one or two or even a number three type starter in his career, but I think he fits the number three bill this year, is the Michael Lorenzen from Detroit. He was an all-star for them. He was their only all-star, but I think, he has shown enough this year for me to have interest, in the next couple of days to fill out a rotation, and outside chance he could be a playoff, a starter for you in, game three, let's say, which has a ton of value for teams who, are limited in that area.
Jim, really appreciate the time here as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline. Do you just keep the phone off these days? Because this time a year might have freaked you out in the past.
I like it. I turn it. I do put it on the sleep mode when I'm in bed, which I never did as a GM. So my sleeping habits are better tonight. So yes, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, they can't get you in the middle of the night anymore, Jim, and wake you up in a cold sweat. Hey, really appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the chaos leading up to the trade deadline. It's going to be interesting. All right, when we come back, Mike Somich is going to join the program next here on Sharp Money.